Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Easy Conversations podcast, a podcast about having easy conversations, where we talk about mental health, adversity, spirituality, and societal issues. I'm your host, Furkan Dandia, and join me in this week's insightful and knowledgeable episode with Alicia Patterson, where we delve into the nuanced world of women's health and the often overlooked aspects of birth control. Together, we embark on a journey that goes beyond the surface, fostering a space for healthy discourse on these crucial topics. Alicia is a renowned women's health advocate, and she brings her expertise to the forefront as she shares her perspective on the negative impacts of birth control. Drawing from her extensive knowledge and experience, Alicia explores the complexities of birth control methods and their effects on women's bodies, minds, and lives. Together, we take a deep dive into the various forms of birth control, discussing the benefits and potential side effects, as well as the importance of individualized choices for women. Alicia and I examine the impact of hormonal birth control on mental health, relationships, and overall well-being, providing a balanced and evidence-based perspective. Together, our hope was to navigate this topic with grace and sensitivity, and to emphasize the importance of open and informed conversation about women's health and the options available. Alicia Patterson is a mental health counselor and women's pelvic health specialist in Denver, Colorado. On top of years in the emergency mental health field, Alicia also holds additional training in EMDR therapy and other trauma-oriented tools such as dance movement therapy, body psychotherapy, visceral manipulation, dialectical behavioral therapy, crisis assessment and remediation, attachment and perinatal psychology, gestalt and transpersonal psychology, and more holistic models balancing the medical and alternative healing fields. Alicia provides a variety of services, including specialized somatically oriented individual counseling, dance movement therapy, holistic pelvic care, practitioner training, professional mentorship, and more. To learn more about Alicia's work, please check out her website, www.aliciannpatterson.com, or her Instagram at aliciapattersonthx. And if you could leave a 5-star review at the end of the episode or comments in the comment section, I would truly appreciate it. And a brief word for our sponsors. So I would like to talk about deodorants because I'm tired of constantly replenishing my deodorant and then having to worry about disposing those plastic containers. There's a solution for that. Wild. Wild provides a eco-friendly, all-natural deodorant with a sustainable design. They provide a for-life aluminum case. For me, they sent me a personalized case with my name on it. And did I mention you can customize your orders and have these refills delivered straight to your door? This is an all-natural solution where there's no aluminum in the product, just in the case. Go to wearewild.com and use code EASY at checkout for 25% off your first order. All right, Alicia, welcome to the Easy Conversations podcast. Thank you for joining me today. I'm really excited about the opportunity to talk with you. But before we get started, I do want to give you an opportunity to share with the listeners who you are, what you do, and then we'll Great. Just kind of jump right
thanks
into it.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for everyone listening. I am a somatic psychotherapist, which is mental health work. It just means body-based psychology and very specific kind of program and field, and is really gaining a lot of attention now with, you know, all the vagus nerve stuff out there and everyone's awareness of trauma and the nervous system, which is wonderful. So that's my main focus in my work. And I also have a women's pelvic health practice. So I really specialize in women's health, and I have psychotherapy available, and I also have a bodywork practice, which includes abdominal work and pelvic floor work, which is intravaginal muscle and organ and nerve therapeutic treatment. So I'm like one of the only ones out there that is a psychotherapist and really has a lot of experience and training and working with trauma, and also offers pelvic floor therapy. Excuse me. Sorry about that. So that's the synopsis of my work is women's health work and really focusing on pelvic health, which is a huge need in our country. I'm in the United States.
No, thank you for sharing that. And yeah, it's very interesting, the whole notion of women's health. And just out of curiosity, I would like to perhaps understand what made you want to go into this space and do the work you're doing.
Great question. I'm very transparent and happy to share. The main thing that got me veering into this women's health work is my own experience and all of my work with myself. I always say that my experience getting into somatic therapy was like a parallel road with my own pelvic health process with myself. And, you know, it's been a long road, like maybe like 20 years of like really trying to address my experience of my menstrual cycle and my hormones and my experience with this part of my body. It was always very challenging for me just in terms of symptoms. And then when I started to unpack my pulling the thread of what it means to be a woman and my experience with myself and my body and with relationships and my family and sexism and work and having a couple experiences of assault, which is, you know, just pervasive. And like everybody seems to have a story and an experience of assault in modern societies, at least. So it just kind of blew my top off when I started to really get into the emotional and the psychological connections about why this part of my body was causing me so many challenges. And repairing that relationship with this part of myself has been so profound and really beneficial for my health. So, you know, all of this work that I offer, I did it for myself first and really explored this deep excavation. And I started just saying, people need this. And the more I talked about it and the more I opened the door for people to do this work on themselves, the more flooded I got with more people and referrals. And, you know, I don't think that's about me. I think I have some really good training and some skills, and I've done this work for myself. So that's really helpful. And I just see it as a huge need, and I kind of stumbled into it and then was amazed at the response I was getting from clients and colleagues in both directions, you know, some like major fans and some a lot of judgment and a lot of taboo and a lot of like, you know, this isn't okay. And I was like, whoa, like what, you know? So it's been a really, really interesting journey for me personally and professionally. And I'm really out there, you know, like I'm licensed, I'm credentialed, I'm heavily trained, and I talk very openly. And I really encourage people to ask questions about this. And I have, you know, a lot of reasons for that. Like, I really think that the systems that we swim in don't care about women's health. And so I say, well, then we have to take it into our own hands. And that's a big dialogue that I think is happening in our country.
Right. Yeah, no. And thank you for sharing that and that vulnerability. I agree with you for sure. And I mean, just kind of first looking at the trauma angle, and I've covered it on the podcast often, that in itself, as you alluded to, the emotions and the physical trauma too can get stored in the body, right? And that can impact the overall functioning of our body. And then on top of that, I've had people share with me how they're kind of angry in a way with society in terms of how society's almost, I don't want to use the word manipulate, but has manipulated a lot of us around some of our own ideologies and the choices we make. And, you know, what I've heard a lot of the times, even like as simple as something you and I had discussed offline too, but birth control has been very misleading. And, you know, from a lot of the times, the brunt of that falls on women, and then the choices they make, and then some of the consequences that aren't really either fully disclosed, or there's no knowledge or even support around it after the fact, when there's other unintended consequences. What are your thoughts around that? And that's something I think that doesn't get talked about a lot. And to your point, obviously can also lead to a lot of backlash, because people either feel personally attacked, or they just don't want to have those difficult conversations.
Yeah. The birth control topic, you know, we're having this conversation within, I think, like, it's actually like the anniversary. It's like about a year, I think, or it was in the spring. I can't even remember. But this whole Roe v. Wade thing, mm-hmm. and the changes in abortion law in our country. So the birth control and the abortion and the miscarriage and the basically regulation of birth is a huge conversation, and birth control is absolutely part of that. And the, you know, the challenges mm-hmm. are that women's health is so intricate. It is so, like, the dialogue is so complex. And I really do understand, on one level of like really big picture thinking, that healthcare and the government is like, there is no way to fully address women's health, because their own experience of their birth and their early life and their hormones and what they were exposed to developing and chemicals in our food and what type of partnership they're in and genetic stuff, you know, it's like, it's just kind of impossible. And I think that that's where, and I don't want to smash the medical field. You know, medicine has done incredible things in some ways, but when it comes to women's health, it's really just lacking, and there's not enough research, there's not enough funding. And so when it comes to birth control, it's like, well, here are these solutions that we have. None of them are actually good for mm-hmm. anyone's body. The side effects are, the laundry list of side effects is like debilitating for some people, and for other people it's kind of manageable. And an unwanted pregnancy can be a nightmare for people. So it's a real, and you know, I'm not like pro this or anti this. I mean, I am pro abortion right. and choice around abortion, and I always will be. But outside of that, the birth control piece for me is that informed consent and education and awareness of what people are doing to their bodies is what's important. And I mean, I had my own experience as a young person trying different avenues and feeling like I needed to, and then starting to feel like really strange in my body, and realizing as I was getting older, and I don't have children, I've chosen not to, but if I wanted to, I started really researching and reading and realizing and talking to other people in my life that if I'm on birth control for this many years and then I go off and I want to have a baby, what does that mean? And so many people have these challenges of pumping their bodies full of synthetic hormones, which we know is not good for a developing body before our brain is even done developing. You know, 18-year-olds, 13, 14-year-olds are just put on birth control just to manage their symptoms instead of addressing what's really going on in their health or in their life. And then they go off of birth control and they start to have all of these challenges with their health. And so it's really, it's a very hard conversation, and it's never something that I want to give like a blanket answer to and say, this is the only way. I just feel like we have to be so heavy duty advocating for ourselves and asking so many questions and researching. And it's just such a huge issue across the board. It's like, you know, with my age now, like I see clients and I have friends who are starting to navigate the menopause time, and they're having all of these symptoms, and they're like, this is, like way beyond what I've heard is quote normal, and they're asking questions and their healthcare providers are saying, oh, well, you know, good luck with that. And you could try this. And it's like taking a pill and finding a specialist who acknowledges like, yes, hormones do all of these things, such as lubricating our shoulder joint and helping our neurological functioning. And here's all these things that can happen if you're draining your life force your whole life. And then you get into menopause, you are in a really hard spot because your body is just tanked of what you need. And it's incredible. You know, I think women's health has just been, you know, we live in a patriarchal society that says, this is what you will do for me, and I will extract that, and then I will throw you away. And so many women feel that way. Women feel that way around birth. Like, I had this incredible story told to me one time of a woman who felt like as she walked into the hospital, she got the best treatment, and she's like, they're, you know, I'm glowing, and they're like, wow. And then as soon as the baby is out of me, I'm put into like the basement, disgusting room, and I get no attention. And it's just, it's so black and white, mm-hmm. and it's so extreme, and it's sad. And it's the function of the way our country is controlled by systems, and we all are players in it. And that's my, you know, my opinion. And I've really tried to step out of it for myself yeah. as much as I possibly can. And I see so many people in my office that are just bereft with grief, like infertility treatments, for example. Mm-hmm. It's so invasive. It's so painful. It's so traumatizing. And we need so many resources. And at this point, you know, I think I'm a little jaded because I'm a practitioner, but I think a lot of practitioners feel this way, and they're right. going, is this hopeless? Like, there's not enough people. There's not enough people talking about this. There's the massive numbers of people that are experiencing trauma around women's health all day, every day. And then there's just a couple people having conversations mm-hmm. like I am. And it's very disturbing to me. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, thank you for that. And I mean, just looking back now, I mean, obviously there's a lot of wisdom and that comes with age and you gain experience, but just looking back, I feel like anytime you're taking something exogenous and like you're messing with the normal chemical balance of your body, to me, that should be a red flag. Like, just thinking back now, and unfortunately when we're younger, our brain hasn't developed fully, but at the same time, we're also impressionable, and it's easy to be influenced based on what your peers are doing or what others are telling you or what seems cool. And I see a lot of that even happening now, from my perspective, in a different way, right? Where kids are being told they can make decisions regarding their body. They can take hormone blockers. They can do this, they can do that. And that to me is just very concerning as a father, but also just a member of society. I feel like it is part of my responsibility to look out for the welfare of our children, because they are our future. And just hearing all of that and seeing it is alarming. And, you know, I guess part of the reason why we can have these conversations is we may not agree on everything, but at least we're trying to highlight something that is a potential issue in the world.
Absolutely.
Today.
Yeah. I mean, that's the benefit of our system, is that this country is built on freedom of speech, for better or for worse, what all of that means. You know, we're not, yeah. I mean, we are, you know, there's all these things happening around censorship, and there's arguments, and there is some censorship that's happening. And, it's mm-hmm. very painful. It's hard to have the level of complexity. And I really do think that the United States is going through something very specific. It's like it's going through its own very particular, unique thing around, especially this, like making decisions about our bodies and our hormones while people are still developing. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, again, pro or anti, but changing the physiology of a young person while they are developing is something that you can't get back. It's like there's, you know, that is a very vulnerable window to be intervening. And when I encounter people that live in other cultures or other countries, they look at the United States and they're like, what? It's just like way outside of what their mind can comprehend. And they're like, what are you all going through? You know, around all the things, around sexuality, around sexual assault, around gender, around hormones, around surgeries, around the racial conversation. You know, we have a lot behind us, and I think it's just getting explosive and it's all coming out. And in some ways that can be very healing, and in other ways that can be very destabilizing. And it's so painful. And I, you know, I do feel like I have my finger on the pulse a little bit. You know, I have 50 clients that I'm like, okay, you're my, like, I'm like kind of shepherding you through. And so I get to hear what people are experiencing, and I watch social media and I read the comments because I want to have a finger on the pulse of what's happening in the social dialogue. And it's incredible. Mm-hmm. It is like, and I've been a therapist for 10 to 12 years, and I've been in patient care for 15 years. And part of it is age and experience and perspective. And part of it is the residue of a world crisis. Like, I've never seen what I'm seeing now as a mental health practitioner. And I've worked in inpatient hospitals. I've worked in emergency rooms. I've really been in some hard environments. I've been to jails. And what I'm seeing now, I'm just like, I mean, my mind is blown. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, one of the things I've noticed is often that experience and knowledge that we gain over time, it has like no merit. You know, people dismiss it, and it's kind of sad to see, because you kind of see from ancient civilization, a lot of the times you followed the lead of the elders or the people that came before you, and you kind of learned from them. And we've kind of lost that in today's world, which can be frightening at times, or just, I don't like to live in that mindset, but it is concerning for sure. But the other piece, you know, a lot of people I have spoken to, specifically women, again, the choices they made as young women, now they're paying the price, right? And as you alluded to earlier, if they want to have children, they can't conceive. They're having other bodily issues that they weren't aware of at the time, obviously, based on the choices they were making. And so that alone is problematic from my perspective. But at the same time, what can, obviously we're talking about women's health here, but what can women do to be more mindful of that, irrespective of their age, and some of the work you're doing in terms of educating your clients?
Yeah, that's so important. And I do agree about this piece around elders. And the United States is one of truly the most embarrassing examples around this, like how we treat our elders is quite disturbing to me. And
yeah, Canada's not far behind.
Yeah, it's really, it's striking. It's very, very painful. Yeah. And, you know, that's like a whole universe. We could open up a big talk about that. So when it comes to working, and sometimes I work with young people, and it is, you know, working based on where someone is at and their development, I think is very important. The way that I work with an 18 or a 20 year old is very different than the way that I'm working with someone who's in their 60s, who gave birth 30 years ago. Like, we really have to acknowledge where this person is. And I always start with education in a huge way. Education and knowledge truly is power. And it's pretty incredible. I'm thinking of this book that I'm amazed that I got my hands on before I really knew about what it was. it was a long time ago. And I just was like, wow, this is interesting. And I think I saw that someone had it. And so I ordered it. And it shows what they call in the book menstrual extraction, which is basically a manual abortion with a syringe. And now that book is unavailable. It's banned. You can't order it. You can't get your hands on it. So I think the education and access to information is one of the most powerful influences that, and sometimes that can be like too much too soon, you know, like for really young people who are learning so much about the body and like their consciousness can't really metabolize it yet. I think that we just, and that's the big, argument about sex education. You know, I mean, that's like one of the most charged things for parents and schools. And it's like, if we give all of this power to young people and then just say, I hope you make good decisions, you know, parents have so many opinions about that. And I really understand that. And I'm not a parent. So, you know, I don't work with kids intentionally because it's just, it's too much work to work with parents around all of that. But once someone is a legal adult, then I'm saying, well, here is this whole other way. And I really started to go in that other way direction for myself when I was about 23 years old. And I have never stopped educating myself since. And the more I learn and the more I study, the more there's just this huge rabbit hole. And it is like the deepest thing that we can go down to really get into the topic of women's health. And, you know, one of the most illuminating, very disturbing, very painful. I'm so glad I waited until my late 30s to read this book called Unwell Women. And it's the history of women's healthcare. It's the origin of the medical system. It's the origin of Planned Parenthood. It is shocking. And it's just like history, you know, it's like on this date, this happened and this person, and it's basically medical experimentation and without pain medicine and really just horrible atrocities and, you know, no regulation around what was happening to people. And a lot of it was racial. So it's a really big conversation. And the more we educate ourselves and the more we understand what kind of systems we're swimming in, the more painful it can be and the more empowering it can be. So I really just feel like when we really get in touch with our own autonomy and making choices and being as powerful as we can when we're living within these systems that are undeniably so controlling, you know, like look at the abortion thing. It's like, oh, fertility rates is a challenge in this world. There's not enough people having children, so we'll force you. You know, that's basically what is happening around that decision. And fertility rates is a real thing, you know, like population collapse is something that should be talked about. It's happening in other parts of the world. It is a very sad thing, but it's just the way that we go about it. You know, it's this incredibly authoritarian, controlling, like it's so, and I'm in Colorado, so it's, I live in a place with more choice. And so that has a certain effect, but like I know some level of what's happening in the South, for example, and it is like, I mean, I don't even have words. It's so sad and horrible and traumatic. And we're all going to be dealing with that in the next generation. So, you know, we come into our intergenerational patterns and what's happening in our families, and then we have to deal with it. And people are going to be dealing, young people, children, as they get older, are going to be dealing with what's happening in our country for a very long time. And being with young people around that is the best thing that we can offer as adults. And so to help them and attune to them and ask them what they want and need and give them options and protect them and say, this isn't okay. And how can I help you? And how can I support you? And there's just not enough people doing that. You know, I think because of how uncomfortable this is and because of how alarming it can be, I think people either avoid and ignore and deny, or they get extreme and controlling and rigid. And neither of those extremes are helpful to young people. It's either neglectful or it's so controlling that they rebel, and then they go out and they do something that is unsafe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I think part of it also is there's confusion for adults too, right? If the messaging is, if you're not going to support your child's choice, then you're almost, you know, it's almost like child abuse. You shouldn't be allowed to be a parent. Your child should be taken away from you. And then on the other extreme, again, it's like, to your point, living on extremes and the messaging that comes with it is challenging and tough to navigate for a lot of people. But I think at the same time, we need to be aware of that and try to find common ground, which is lost in today's world. And a lot of the times there's that fear of, oh, if I'm going to say something that doesn't resonate, I might get canceled, or what I have to say might be controlled, or it might not get out there. And then on the flip side, what happens is then you only get reinforced with the information you're looking for. That's how a lot of this stuff works in the algorithms too. What you look for is what you're going to keep getting fed. So it's not really giving you an opportunity to exercise critical thinking. You're not bringing in alternative viewpoints or perspectives because you're surrounded by people that are either fearful of expressing themselves or who've basically followed the majority, and you're not really learning anything. And that to me becomes a problem, right? And again, for me, as much as I have my own views, I'm also open to hearing what other people have to say. In fact, I often will try to seek out opposing views to see, okay, what are their arguments, and what, like, if it makes sense, then okay, I start looking at it from that angle too. But we've lost all of that because we're too scared of being challenged in a way, I guess. That's what it really comes down to. And we hold on so dearly to our opinions. And to me, that's a sign that you're not secure in your choice when you're so afraid of being challenged.
The echo chamber is real, and it creates a certain, I always go back to my roots. My main roots is training in mental health, and it affects our cognitive abilities. It affects our neurological process. You know, our neural pathways are grooved into such fixed, like this fixation on the way that our brain works. And the more that we feed that, the more we get of whatever it is. It's like whatever the pattern is, and then we feed it, and it just becomes so strong, for better or for worse. It can be an amazing skill in some ways, and it can be amazingly, black and white thinking is a thing that the therapy world talks about, where it's like, whatever it is, it's like, it's either this or it's this. It's always this or it's always this. And we know that the truth lies in the nuance and in the middle. And when all of the peace work that's happened around the world, negotiations and reciprocity and making repair, and if there's going to be any type of reconciliation between, I'm thinking of the project that happened, I think, in the Congo after huge genocide, and the soldiers that did the killings sat with the families of the people that had died, and they went through this reconciliation process. That cannot happen if there's black and white extremist. It's, I think it's developmental. I think it's a very kind of like a wound of immaturity. And the United States is so immature. I mean, and we're a young country, when it comes to the powers of the world, like we have so much growing up to do. And I see that in the way that we handle the big things in life, like death and birth and sexuality and marriage. And it's just sad is what I, you know, I'm in the United States and I look around and I'm like, yeah, I'm sad by what I'm swimming in. I'm sad by what our young people are going through. Mm-hmm. I'm sad by what's happening for my clients. And I think that's a very appropriate response. It's like, look at what's happening. You know, it's very painful. And it is, mm-hmm. and you know, the political thing is just like, it's so out of hand. You know, sometimes I will see a social media post that is like charged in a way, but it's a really big platform and it's something that gains a lot of attention. And so I'll just read through the comments just because I just want to see what are people mm-hmm. saying when there's no accountability, when they're online, when they can delete their comment if they want to, or they cannot answer whatever. And, you know, especially around right. the gendered stuff, like what men are saying about women and what women are saying about men. And I am so disturbed.
Right.
I mean, I'm like, how do we even come back from this? You know, like I try to hold the candle and so much of it is sexualized and about relationships and about bodies. And it's, we yeah. have a lot of healing to do. And because of my work, I like have to, and I really try, but maintaining the stamina to hold the candle for that is work for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, I can appreciate that. It's not easy, especially in the world today. And along those lines, you mentioned that, you know, there has been backlash in terms of the work you do. What form of backlash have you received? Just
oh, sure.
if you'd like to share, just out yeah, of curiosity.
Well, you know, the foundation of it is, it's way beyond me. You know, it's the field of psychology mm-hmm. and mental health work. And I grew up in Washington, D.C., which is, you know, the hub of the government. So it's like I grew up in quite yeah. a controlled, rigid, like very systematic. And in some ways it, you know, helped me like my professionalism, for example, I think is because of where I grew up. It's like this ability to be really professional. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing skill. And it's a very rigid place.
Yeah.
So I think of that rigidity as the bedrock of any system, and psychology and mental health is a system. Like having the licensure that gives you the capacity to do mental health work is a medical license. It's seen as a medical job. Yes. It's very, especially, you know, around suicide, like the main thing around mental health is the liability around suicide. So it's a very, very particular licensure to hold. And that field mm-hmm. traditionally and historically says you never touch your client ever. It's just like hard mm-hmm. stop, hard rule. And in some ways, I really do understand it. And most of that rule comes because of male therapists having sex with their clients. And I'm like, oh boy, you know, like, okay. So I get why it exists. And for me, I have training. I have credentials in both mental health and body work. I work under massage in Colorado. That is a very, it's kind of like a gray zone. Like the statutes of the licensure is so archaic. Like, what does that even mean? Like the way yeah. that they write it out is so, it's just weird, honestly. And when I wrote to the board and said, this is my practice, I need some feedback. They're like, click here for the statutes. And I'm like, that, you know, it's not telling me anything that I actually need. So it's a really charged topic. And there are some therapists that I encounter that look at my work and they say, thank you so much. This is like beyond, you know, such big support, so much gratitude, so much acknowledgement of the amount of work that it takes to offer a safe space and to make sure that everything is consensual and there's like real awareness of what's happening. And I mean, entering someone's body, you know, we're working with the inside of the body, and that is the most vulnerable thing right. that anyone can do. And then I encounter therapists that go, you can't do that. Like, you shouldn't be doing that. If you're a psychotherapist, like their brain is just like, you're unethical, you know, like the judgment is, for me, it's the patriarchy. And patriarchy doesn't mean men. It means the system that controls all of us. It's this rigid, controlled, hypervigilant. And, you know, I'm like, I have credentials and I have training and they're separate practices. And that's what I always stand by. And sometimes I get pushback around it. And I, you know, it makes people so uncomfortable to even talk about the vaginal tunnel or the cervix or the uterus. It's like, this is part of our body, just like any other part of our body. And so many people have trauma and we need support. And
yeah,
I have the licenses and I have the credentials. And so it's been a real thing. And I've been in the dialogue for like about 10 years, you know, and part of the somatic program is talking about therapeutic touch work. And the somatic field has always been the stepchild of the psychology field, you know, the very hardcore, like cognitive behavioral work, heavy, clinical, like evidence only, research and evidence only. And they look at the somatic world and they're like, you're so fluffy, like get out of here. You know, it's really, really interesting. And I left Washington, D.C. because I didn't want traditional psychology work. I wanted alternative work. I wanted somatic work. Touch has always been huge for me, and sitting and talking didn't do enough for me. So it's very, very wild to talk with practitioners about it. And people have such strong opinions, you know, like it's one of those things that just makes people so polar in the field. People either tend to be like, you should never, absolutely not. Or they're like, yeah, for sure. And there's a lot of nuances in between the extremes. And that's what I want to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, there's something to be said about the whole mind, body, soul kind of integration, which we don't necessarily appreciate, even from a psychotherapy perspective. If you're only going to focus on the mind, it's only a fraction of the whole being, right? And what I appreciate, like I came across Peter Levine's work, and he talks about anytime you want to take on that somatic approach, you almost have to do that work on yourself, right? You can't really help someone else if you're not fully in tune with your inner workings and the physical sensations and all of that. But, you know, along the point you made around patriarchy and perhaps the, I think for me personally, that compulsion really emanates from tyranny, right? Anytime you're forcing someone. And I do find it ironic that the Western world is going around the globe trying to teach others about democracy rather than look at their own backyard and seeing some of the compulsion that's happening and people being forced to do things against their will with significant consequences, right? So, I mean, that's a separate conversation, but it's interesting to see, right? And then when you kind of speak up or you voice your own opinion, then it's like, well, no, you don't get a voice. Or if you don't agree with the mob, you're going to get canceled or shut down, right? And so it's that fear again that keeps coming up. But, you know, I do want to give you an opportunity also to perhaps share if you feel like there's more there. But like just in general around for women that are listening, regardless of their age, but what can they do to take more I don't want to say control, but have more of an influence on their choices and be aware of these choices that they're making, regardless of they're being told externally.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. There is a list, you know. There's all that we can do is address what is within our control. And there's so much that is not within our control. I mean, like food, you know, like everybody at this point is kind of aware, like the way that the United States manages food is incredibly problematic. And, you know, when people who eat in the United States and they eat dairy and they eat gluten and they eat meat and they try to keep it pretty clean, but it's still, there's only so much you can do. And then they go to Europe and they eat all of those things and they have no digestive issues and they feel amazing. And it's like, well, okay, so there's plenty that is not within our control, and that is true. And I bring up that issue because our products and our foods and what we put in and on our bodies is filled with what my favorite public health people call endocrine disruptors. It's incredibly challenging on our endocrine system to be loading our body with pesticides and herbicides are one of the biggest examples. So it's like, you can do all the healing work in the world. You can do tissue work. You can do psychological work. You can do the emotional part. But if your life is just loaded with a certain caliber of problems for your body, that emotional, psychological body work is only going to go so far. So the first thing I say is, look at what you're putting on and in your body. And it's tricky because that conversation is married to the conversation around wealth and resources. You know, the best food and the best products cost money. And the highest quality things that are really good for our bodies are incredibly expensive. And if you live in a food desert and all you have within a 40-mile radius is a gas station that has Cheetos and M&Ms, it's like, well, good luck cleaning up your lifestyle. You know, it's a really big systemic issue. So there's only so much that some people can do about that. But if you do have control over it, and I've done that for myself, I've completely overhauled my entire lifestyle. And it took me a long time. Because if you try to do all of it all at once, it is kind of impossible and you'll get burnt out and it's really hard to upkeep if you just, you know, 180 and then within a month you're like, oh my God, this is like, I can't sustain this. So that's taken me a decade to like fully transition into a whole different way of living. And that's where my money goes. You know, my money goes to good food and really good quality products and making sure that my environment is as clear as it can possibly be. And, you know, in a way that was a sacrifice. Like what I used to spend on was quite different. And now what I spend on is trying to maintain my health. And I wanted to say before I go back to this, I love that you brought up Peter Levine. You know, Peter has built an incredible body of work. And the traditional, like the academy, basically. Academia is one of the most oppressive systems in the whole thing. And they look at Peter and they go, no. And I asked when I was in graduate school, why are we not learning about Peter Levine? Like, I was so confused. And my teacher literally said to me, well, there's not enough research. And, you know, his books are just kind of fluffy. And I was like, what? Like, I mean, I was pissed, you know, just, so it's really incredible. This like, dividing, like the controlling the masses and who gets in and who's not allowed. And I mean, academia is like the biggest bully in the whole world. So it's, and I love education, you know, I'm a big fan of education. I'm very educated. And being within the academy, I've been within the academy for my whole life. And I am just like, ooh, you know, it's really painful. It's hard. So back to what we can do. I mean, I'm a huge reader. I devour information. Like Taking Charge of Your Fertility by Tony Weschler is like the textbook of, if you want to know your body, if you want to learn about your cervical fluid and your hormones and the changes in your tissue and how to take your temperature. And eventually, if you master that system, it is a very well-worn, it's not family planning. It's based on what's going on in your body. And some people use it full on as birth control. They don't want any methods of an IUD or a pill or hormones. And they go, I'm going to use the science. So, you know, books like that are invaluable, in my opinion, especially for people that are developing, that want to start to learn. And some of it, you know, if I had read that one when I was 23, it would have been way over my head. I wasn't ready for that. So in a way, I'm glad that I had access to birth control, and I'm glad that I had access to being incredibly cautious with my choices. And that's my, you know, this is a really big one when it comes to sexual liberation and freedom of sexual expression, which the United States is absolutely like, yeah, you know, like own it, use your power, do what you want, which in a way is incredibly freeing and in a way is incredibly risky and vulnerable. And the older I get and the more I talk with young people and I'm going, are you being sexually safe? Are you getting tested? Are you talking with your partner about who they're also sharing their body with? Are you monogamous? Are you agreeing to not be monogamous? And they're just like, you know, what the fuck are you talking about? Is kind of like the, and I'm sitting here going, oh boy. Okay. So let's start with, when you share your body with someone, it has an incredible impact. And that is one of the biggest choices that you can lean into and really look at what you're doing. And I, you know, I never want to shame people. And I mean, I got shamed, you know, like our culture just is shame. That's like the basis of so many religions, you know, it's just like sexual shame is like what is delivered. And so then people, they swing the pendulum and they go way over here. And so I'm like,
yeah,
being cautious with what you do with your body is one of the biggest advice points that I give to anyone who's starting to ask these questions, and medical. I mean, you can't take back what you do, but you can always wait and ask more questions. And one thing that, you know, I just talk about myself because it's the easiest, and it's not really right to talk about clients most of the time. When I was in my early 20s, I got an abnormal pap, and I was so young, and this was the first time I heard the cancer word. It wasn't cancer, it's pre-cancer, it's abnormal cells, and I was scared shitless. Like, I was absolutely just, you know, and so I'm sitting there with this doctor. I didn't ask her one question except for like, what am I supposed to do? And she said, well, we do this and we do this and we do this. So I had this procedure called the LEAP procedure, which is where they freeze or laser or totally remove parts of the organ. It was so traumatic for me. It really influenced the scope of like how my life went. And when I started doing this work on myself, it took me years, and I started reading and I said, oh my God, I have scar tissue on my cervix. I didn't even, you know, thinking about scar tissue was just not within my realm of awareness until I got older, and reading about how scar tissue can prevent, if you want to have a pregnancy, it can prevent it. And I'm just sitting there going, nobody told me that. I wish that they had just talked to me about that. And this whole like precancerous cell stuff is one of the biggest controversial topics in the OBGYN world, you know, and again, this polarizing thing, there are so many women saying you can heal abnormal cells. if you get your immune system and your nervous system in check and you use herbs as medicine, the highest quality plants, you totally revolutionize your lifestyle. You give it 3 to 6 months. If you're diligent and committed, you can heal an abnormal pap. And then there are people in the medical world saying, absolutely not. This is ridiculous. You know, it's just like sometimes yes and sometimes no. And nobody, and my parents, you know, I mean, and they didn't know, you know, I don't want to shit on my parents, but I just want to sit here and go,
yeah,
that was the first, like real invasive medical experience I ever had in my early 20s. And I think that it could have gone very differently. And it was so, so painful for me. So ask questions, you know, push back, make medical experience consensual. And the hard part is a lot of medical providers, they do not like that. They feel that it's a waste of their time. They don't understand it. It's not part of their training. You know, medical training, it's like bedside manner is not part of their training. Their training is you get the work done and you flush as many people through as you can. And it's like we are part of that. The medical industrial field is incredible. So we have to ask questions and we have to push back and we have to be what I call a difficult patient. I'm a very difficult patient, you know. I have a lot of demands. I'm like, this is, you know, can you slow down? Can you let me insert the speculum? Can you use lubricant? Can you use plastic instead of metal? Can you warm it up? You know, and they're just looking at me like, you're insane. And I'm like, well, I'm insane. You know, like I'm happy to be whatever. This is how it's going to go. Like I'm a consumer and you serve me. And it's a really rough road. Once you start to awaken to like, this is what you have to do if you want good healthcare. And I just think that that applies to everything. Yeah. You know, it's like, I'll close with this question, at least. One of my mentors had ovarian cancer and she is incredibly empowered and she shares really openly about it, which is why I feel like I can say, you know, like she's out there about it. She said, I chose to do the radical surgery. I chose to do the chemo and radiation. And I went in there and I said, dilute that. I don't need that much. You're going to give me this. Give me 10% of that. You know, she's basically just like really taking control. And she's like, I don't consent. This is what I consent to. And it's like a battle and is probably so much better for her body. And I'm amazed at how she went through that process. You know, like I've seen so many people go through cancer treatment and they're debilitated by being flooded with whatever the medicine is. And it's just too much. Then seeing someone else who was able to stay functional and be like, I'm like, whoa. So I just think that that's how modern systems work. And if you're going to live in a modern system, you know, you can either collapse around it and get like, it's hopeless and despair, or you can say, okay, I'm going to grab this by the horns and I'm going to master whatever I have control over. And that's my advice to all women, elder women, young women, women having pregnancy and birth. You know, it's just the circumstance that we're swimming in.
Yeah. And thank you for that again and sharing your own personal experience. And, you know, based on what you shared, even with some of the challenges Peter Levine's had, I think part of the main theme here is science. If it can't be explained scientifically, people will be skeptical, but we have also learned that science only, we only know what we know today, right? And tomorrow we're always learning new information. And then we realize that, oh, some of the things we were doing before were insane, right? So that's just something to be mindful of. And, you know, to your point, doing the research, there's tons of books out there. Try to learn as much as you can about what you're putting into your body. Like for me personally too, just being aware of what I'm eating, thinking about my gut health, which we're learning, coming to learn that is our second brain. So are we taking care of our gut? And I mean, obviously that too can have implications based on what we're consuming on a daily basis. And we've talked about people's diets and some of the food that's available, readily available for us. You often have to question, okay, why is it so readily available and what's going on in there, right? So just wanted to highlight that. I just want to be mindful of your time, but thank you again for coming on here and sharing some of that wisdom with us. For listeners that do want to get a hold of you and learn more from you, what are some ways they can do that, whether it's online or social media?
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And I mean, really wonderful conversation. So my website has a ton of information. That's probably the best like hub if you want to just read more. I have a lot of resources available and people can get in touch with me through my website. And I am on social media. I mean, I'm hardly on Facebook and I don't do any of the newer ones, but I am on Instagram. That's the only one that I sort of maintain. You know, mostly it's like my cats or a little share if I have an event going on. But I'm happy to be on Instagram and just, you know, people want that. And so I've chosen one platform and that's where you can find me. And my email list really is, if I'm going to share online, it's usually on my email list is where I'm more transparent. I will share more. I will put out more details about things. So if you really want to connect with me and say like, what's she doing? Joining my email list is probably the best way to get in close touch with me.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. And I'll get that from you and I'll put it in the show notes for the episode so people can go find it there. But yeah, just wanted to again take the opportunity to express my gratitude and thank you again for coming on here and having this conversation.
It's refreshing to have conversations with male show hosts who like really can and want to talk about this. It is a huge need. And, you know, fathers in our country, it's like, there's only so much, like we need all of it. There's only so much that women are going to do around this. Like we need conversations in our families. We need conversations with our fathers. And it's different. It's different than having a conversation with a woman. And I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you for checking out this episode with Alicia. As always, please leave a review or comments in the comment section. I always love hearing from you. And also, if you haven't, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or check out our sponsors in the show notes. Thank you, and until next week.